everyone. I'm Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife with Midwifery Business Consultation. I have Jenny West, a midwife that has extensive experience. And we had so much fun chatting before hitting record. I was like, let me introduce myself real quick and let's hit record. These gems are too important to miss. So thank you, Jenny, for joining me today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah. So Jenny, tell me about your midwifery journey. You can go as deep down the rabbit hole as you want. I'm very excited to hear park ranger to midwife. So let's start from the beginning.
Yeah, I'm third generation National Park Service. I knew in school and college that I was going to wear the Smokey the Bear hat, which is really the Forest Service, a little different than the National Park Service. And yeah, I just knew that's what I was going to be when I grew up. However, those of you who are old enough to remember 1988, Yellowstone was on fire. So I was on the fire line for 36 days straight, which was unheard of. Dangerous for the firefighters, you know, just, but everything was on fire and nothing was helping it. And part of what happened during that 36-day run is life got real simple. Everything got very clear and black and white. You're either awake or sleeping, hungry or not hungry, safe or running for your life. So it's like I had time to sort of reevaluate what is it that I was trading off as a woman in a male-dominated field to get where I wanted to go, where I thought I could be. And something shifted.
Whoa.
Totally fine, Jenny. So something came to you, huh?
Well, what's going on here? Sorry about that.
That's something okay. We can easily edit that part out. All good.
That's good. That's good.
Minor things.
Okay, let's see if that'll stay.
All good. Yeah, we can fix that part. No problem. So you were explaining just being in a male dominated occupation and getting back to the basics and realizing priorities.
And yeah. So being out on the line for 36 days straight, something clicked, something shifted. And I realized I probably was on the wrong train.
Yeah.
Whatever if this was my career path, I didn't want to have to carry a gun, but in order to move forward, GS5, GS7, GS9, that forward progress. And then when I looked at my supervisors and what they were doing or not doing, I thought, I don't want to look like that 5 years from now. So I thought about what inspired me. And when I was working seasonally in Yellowstone prior in 1986, I was called out on two calls. They were full-time employees, the wives of two full-time employees that were pregnant. And this is old enough that everybody had a walkie-talkie still. And anybody who's old enough to know that if you yell into the radio, it sounds like the squawky noise on the Charlie Brown nobody can, yeah. So you knew immediately as the dispatcher if there was a pregnant person or a birth happening because there was yelling into the radio. So I watched the first time I was right in the panic with everybody, got her out of the park and into the hands of, you know, other paramedics and off to the hospital. The second time it happened, again, I sort of had this moment. And I want to say I sort of floated up to the back high corner of the ambulance. And it was like, wow, everybody's screaming. Everybody's panicking. The baby's not exiting her body. She seems okay. Why are we so hysterical?
Mm-hmm.
And I uttered in my own mind, the key sentence, it's like, too bad nobody here knows what normal looks like, because we're probably finer than we think. So really coming back from the fires is when I said, okay, I'm buying some midwifery books And I went and bought Miles Midwifery at a used bookstore, $5. It had scary pictures, so I knew it would teach me something. And I started collecting how to know what to do if somebody was having a baby. And I started interviewing birth centers to say, I got a 2-week vacation before I quit my career. Let me go stick my toe in the pool. And most of the birth centers, I didn't understand the politics. I could only come for 2 weeks. They thought I was going to push everybody out of the way, get my catches, superimpose, you know, take everybody. And it's like, finally, I
just want to shadow.
No. I don't want to deliver any babies. What are you, nuts? I don't know anything. I'm a park ranger. I don't, you know. And finally, a clinic said, you're willing to answer the phone, do laundry. It's like, I will do whatever you want. I need to just rub elbows with this. So it was a birth center down on the border in El Paso. And I think in about 7 days is when one of the nighttime supervisor, we had 3 women in labor, and she just plunked me down on the bed between this woman's legs and just said, put your hands out,
catch baby.
And I did that 3 times kind of in a row. We had a lot going on that night, and I say that's also when the point of no return occurred for me. It was like, okay. Now, the day I arrived, there was a first-time mom, which I didn't know what that meant. And I remember staggering out of her birth room. I thought, okay, I promised to be helpful. So I went in there and I spent 14 hours with her.
Wow.
And I had read enough to know that pushing usually sounded like grunting. So when she got pushy, I stumbled out to go get somebody real because I don't know what I'm doing.
You just know the high level of what the book told you.
Right. And of course, I was shocked. My internal dialogue was, my back hurt, my leg hurt, my knees almost buckled, and I think I have a headache. Fighting fires is easier than labor sitting. But I went and got some, whoever was on call, first on, second on, and supervisor. And yeah. I don't know what the instructors there saw, but like I said, 7 days into my test trial, I was receiving babies. So I went back from that and quit my job, packed the car, went back down to the birth center. And at that point you did 3 months.
Okay.
This is long enough ago. This is 1988.
Mm-hmm.
I did act on my aha moment on the fire line. And ended up down there for 3 months because in 1988, Texas didn't have licensing, but you had to have a permit like a dog. So okay. I was a permitted midwife, and based on what was going on at that time in 3 months, and we did 30 births a month. I took my test on April 1st. So I had a Texas county permit. The owner of the clinic begged me to stay. And I was like, I couldn't have articulated it then, but it's like, what I know now was what I was reacting to was, don't trust your reputation to me.
Yeah.
I haven't even been a midwife for 10 minutes and you're begging me to stay. It's like, what's wrong with you? I got it. Now that I have this piece of paper, I got to go get more training or something. Mm-hmm. It's like, what are you thinking? So 3 days later, she convinced me. And I ran into her many, many years later at a class. And I said, just out of curiosity, why did you insist? I said, I'm glad I did, because in hindsight, my education really began the moment I had my license. I had to start integrating and figuring out what to do because I was the midwife in the room. Right. As long as you're a student, you got a safety net most of the time. Right. Mm-hmm. So didn't know that yet. She says, you had the ability to walk into the room, assess what was happening, formulate a plan and then execute it. You didn't always do the right thing as a student, but I could teach you that. That's why you were there. She says, I don't know how to teach being able to assess and execute. And it's like, oh, well, that's from being a park ranger. If you've got the hat on and the duty belt on, guess what? The expectation is you're going to know what to do no matter what, all the way from where are the bathrooms, what time does Old Faithful go off, when do the moose turn into elk? Oh, and by the way, a buffalo gored my husband from groin to ankle. That's when I decided I needed to become a paramedic because I didn't know anything about that either. But it's like, who knew that being a park ranger
would be a good prerequisite?
Perfect training.
Yeah, for you are first midwife with the prerequisite of park ranger I've ever heard.
Well, you know, and again, dating myself, when Carolyn Steiger wrote Becoming a Midwife, I was still working at Petrified Forest National Park when that book was available. And I called her and I said, I need your book. I need to know how to do this. I'm thinking of quitting. And I remember her saying, you're that park ranger. And it's like, how does she know me? And I can't remember what she said now. Yeah. But yeah. I highly recommend it you want to have two careers. And of course, if my mom were still alive, she would have said, oh yeah, this is what my daughter does. She's going to now do this for 2 or 3 years and then decide she has to become a pilot. So
just totally another thing in left field.
So apparently I have a tremendous capacity to intake information and skills and then do something.
Adapt and react. But I think the biggest thing is you act on it. I mean, so many people have great ideas. So many people have wishes and hopes and that human nature of too much routine and too much comfort zone. You're a person that it's very easy to see. You're willing to learn new things and jump out of your routine. It's very, and that's very few people because that's not a typical human nature to just say,
hey. And it's funny, you know, a lot of people would say how brave I am. And I thought, really, the internal dialogue is what a chicken I am. Aww. Because the realization was, and it was in federal law enforcement school, I have to thank, there was a park ranger that worked at Corpus Christi that, you know, kind of helped me integrate it. Because it was like, I can't quite put my finger on it. That, you know, I'm the law enforcement officer, and yet why am I so nervous? I know something's wrong here, but I can't quite put my finger on it. And that's really what did it, was it's like, if I have to carry a gun and act like I'm in charge here, get out of my way, I'm the park ranger, what are you doing in my park?
Yeah.
It was like,
that doesn't fit your personality.
It did. Sure. Well, yes and no.
Okay.
I mean, it was very interesting to hear what my coworkers said. It's like, oh yeah, when Jenny starts calling you ma'am or sir, you've had it. She's busy adding, there's 11 code of federal regulation stipulations that you can add to any ticket if you're annoying the officer.
Okay.
And nobody argues with them. They're very, you know,
straightforward.
It's like, yeah. So I heard it all the time. It's like, I want to talk to a real ranger. And of course, usually they're seeing me from, you know, the chest up. And of course, as soon as I walked out of the entrance station or wherever it was, and they saw the duty belt, it was like, is this real enough for you?
Yeah.
I said, I'm happy to call my supervisor, but I'm sure he won't be happy. So yeah. You know,
I think maybe the woman empowerment side of you comes out. I see that feistiness where advocacy and more rights of equal for professions and just choices.
Right. You know, it's like I took the same training as everybody else, but still it was also timing. You know, I remember and grading the homework for the history of midwifery. That those timelines, you know, I remember as a young teenager, my mom having to get permission to wear a pantsuit to work. So I have that. Now we know about epigenetics and what happens when you're in utero and what happens the first 5 years of life. So yeah, I was in that mindset that I was supposed to be a good girl.
Yeah.
And how dare I become a park ranger and then be good at it.
Yeah.
In hindsight, I wonder if that was really the threat.
Yeah.
Because I was also the firefighter, structural and wildland, you know. But we now know in hindsight, what I was a teacher.
Yeah.
And most park rangers, that's the biggest part of your job.
Yeah.
Is, you know, do you understand why you ran the stop sign? Because you were slapping your kids in the back seat because you've been in the car for 12 hours. Mm-hmm. You're on vacation. Get out of the car. Actually enjoy this. Don't now, of course, everybody takes pictures and enjoys it on the rebound. Could you be present and enjoy this? You're not going to drive to Glacier tonight. Do you have any idea how far that park is? You know? So yeah, what you do mostly is educate, which then of course as a midwife, I say that's my biggest job. It isn't showing up when the baby's coming out. It isn't scheduling the prenatal visits or being on call. It's making sure that the client in front of you has the most accurate evidence-based information.
Choices that they can make and they're getting through informed consent. Yeah.
Exactly. So that they are making decisions based on accurate information so that hopefully we can prevent some of the coulda, shoulda, woulda.
Mm-hmm.
Because of course, as a midwife, the second baby, the third baby, whatever time it takes for that person to say, I know what's waiting for me if I do what I always did.
Yeah.
So of course, that first visit is usually a big long list of what I'm not going to do. It's like, okay, let's start there. Mm-hmm. Now, can we shift gears a little bit? Let's fast forward to telling your birth story. What are the parts that you would like to tell?
Mm-hmm.
Baby's in your arms, you did it.
Yeah.
What would you like to be able to say about this pregnancy, this labor, this birth, this immediate postpartum? And I should have a camera going. The shock of, I get to think about what I want instead of what I have to accommodate.
What's being done to me or what is the system telling me I have to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and of course, COVID threw a big wrinkle into what we could and couldn't do, and how much fear then got reintegrated back
to the
into
next level,
any of these decisions. You know, the first few phone calls, there was huge education that just because you're afraid to go to the hospital, we're not just changing geography. Yes. I can take you as a client, but do you understand what you're asking for?
You've had three babies with epidurals and you like your pain management, you're probably not a good home birth candidate.
Well,
yeah, those conversations.
You may or may not be a good candidate, but let's talk about a few details before you launch in. And then of course, here in New Mexico, Medicaid is a big factor.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Medicaid is not a sustainable business practice.
Mm-hmm.
I do not take Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because there was a midwife that moved here from New York that we sat down. It was one of our first meetings that it was like, what makes us different? Like, how come we get this? And we started looking at big patterns. Melissa Cheney has told me I'm secretly an anthropologist because I'm always looking for patterns. What we came down to was both of us were single. We didn't have a second person or partner or secondary income. Nobody was giving us money because we were cute or doing the laundry or whatever the rules are. We had both worked in states where it was adversarial.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't want to admit out loud that you were a midwife. I had some experiences when I worked in Montana that you were hard pressed to go to the hospital. You had to really need what they did there to go subject your
And then client. You get labeled the train wreck because you waited too long. So you're kind of in a
sometimes
vicious cycle. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I had one where I was called in. I wasn't the midwife. At that time in Montana, naturopathic physicians, it was legal for them to attend a birth.
Uh-huh.
And the client called and said, we interviewed a long time ago. We've had the baby. We're not comfortable with who's here. Can we pay you to come? And the deal was that they were going to have the baby, but have the placenta at the hospital because that's how the insurance would pay. I don't know. There was all these layers of things. And the upshot was I got there in time for the baby to be born, but there was a hole in the cord. And then I found out that the water had been released for days and days. Baby was having trouble breathing. We ended up at the hospital. And of course, it's still ingrained in me. My chest is contracting. I can hear the doctor's voice. And who brought this woman in? And it was like, it's like, are you going to take me out in the parking lot and shoot me? I did. Yeah. But jammed up the x-rays into the little lighted thing. And he says, you see that? There was about a walnut size amount of lung tissue on both lungs that was working. Whatever you did saved this baby's life. And then stormed out. And I was like, okay.
Oh, okay. I just got like half ridiculed and half complimented, mixed feelings.
Yeah. So part of that arriving in New Mexico, back to looking at those, what criteria, where did I want to practice, mm-hmm. was which states had the best regulations. Yeah. And that boiled down to Alaska, Utah, and New Mexico. And I did enough homework calling different midwives in Utah that I learned it's hard to get paid. Yeah. Or their definition, let me rephrase that. Their definition of getting paid in the early 1990s was $300 for a birth. And the mindset was that, well, you were going to do a lot of births, so it would work out. And it's like,
I know inflation is high, but I don't think it's that fast up.
Well, and back to, you know, if you can just do some basic math, yeah. If every birth is 300, how many births do I have to do a month to break even, pay my rent, blah, blah.
Right.
It's like a single, can't do it, can't maintain it. So I did, I drove to Alaska. I thought I was going to practice in Alaska. Mm-hmm. Was exposed to the boomtown mentality there. That, you know, when things were tight, when it wasn't fishing season, nobody paid anybody anything.
Yeah.
And I just decided, man, I don't know if I can tough out an independent practice.
Right. And those economic waves. Yeah.
Yeah. Half the year, basically, and then hope people remember to pay me. So ended up in New Mexico. So yeah, sorry, looping back to the patterns that we saw, working in states that were adversarial. New Mexico is very supportive of its midwives. The regulations state you have to, and the list is pretty good, if you're going to attend a birth at somebody's home, not a birth center, not an extension of a medical facility. You're required to carry oxygen, Pitocin, Methogen. You know, you're required to know how to start IVs and give antibiotics if the person's group B positive. If they want it. There's also great paper trail that if your client wants to refuse, you know, so that's how I ended up here. And yeah, being single in that I had to earn a living, I had a mortgage payment, and then working someplace where they didn't like you and then moving to someplace they did.
Wow.
Helps you be successful. And that's not to say we don't have group dynamics. You know,
no.
I go into the hospitals and I have some on-call physicians say, oh, you keep a chart? You have a chart? It's like, yeah, I dress myself and drive too. How about that?
Yeah, I can chew gum and talk at the same time. It's quite impressive. So,
but, you know, after a while, I got so that I wasn't offended by that. In fact, it was Dr. Lodog who gave me that piece of information about what physicians give up to have those letters after their name and how affronting it can feel to them sometimes for a midwife to roll in and say, oh, I know an herb for that, or we have a technique for that. And they didn't learn it in medical school.
Yeah.
Yet they gave up their lives, their marriages, the list is long. So it's like, oh, thank you for that. To yeah. sort of see this what seems like abrupt behavior through mm-hmm. their filter allowed me to step way back and say, yeah,
we can try to be in other people's shoes and relate to the challenges that, because you don't know, like maybe they had a bad outcome 5 minutes earlier. Maybe they just, they're fought with right. their wife or spouse, or like, you don't, I think sometimes we forget when this person, they're still a human being. Like, even if it's the most nasty person in the world, someone loves them out there. Someone like there's some other side we just don't see. Yeah.
Right. And yet, let's, you know, when I think about it, when I teach classes and teach midwifery students, it's like, you're not at your best either. Very rarely does anybody roll into the medical model well-rested. You're there because you need what they do. Something's going sideways mm-hmm. or something's just not right. It doesn't have to be hair-raising. Most of the transports, if you look at the data, nothing horrible is happening.
Yeah.
It's the opposite. We can't get labor to go. This is going on too long. Something mm-hmm. else is going on, or else she would have already had her baby. But yeah, that changed all of that, that I could just sort of be this observer. I'm there for the client. I'm not there to make friends or please anybody in the medical model. They have their opinion of me, good and bad.
Yeah, you're not hired by them. You don't have to play. Right. I mean, you don't have to work with them on the next shift. It's a totally different dynamic. Your role is to advocate for the client you're serving.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I mean, it's happened to me a few times where the client has said, why are you yelling at my midwife? And then you can calmly say, yeah, why are you yelling at me?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to say anything. I'm gonna sit behind her. She's protecting me, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The some of the things that occur to me, of course, back to the political nature of birth, depending on where you're birthing, truly the geography, if you're in the medical model, depending on what state you're in, 50 states, we got 50 different countries because we got 50 sets of rules.
Yeah.
And most people have no clue.
And then 5 different educational pathways for midwifery on top of
that. Oh, well, that's a whole other talk. That's a whole other talk that, I mean, and I scribbled notes when you contacted me. The last thing I wrote on my, like, what should we talk about list was, have we gotten so invested in the piece of paper and the criteria to say I'm a midwife that we've forgotten the point?
Yep.
So yeah, I think that's a whole other topic.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking we're at 35 minutes, Jenny. What I'll do is I've got a list of a bunch of, I definitely think we need to have a series. I think you have a wealth of knowledge and there's so many great topics we could talk about. So I'd love to send you another invite for a couple months from now, right before the summer, and we can dive down these other topics. We'll write them down and remember the educational directions. I know you and I talked offline, like even water birth, you're an expert in that. So I'd love to do a talk with that as well.
All right. Well, I hope I didn't sound like a crazy person.
No, I loved it. I mean, honestly, I was like, I wish we'd have booked 3 hours, but I don't know how many people are going to listen to a video for 3 hours. I think they get about 20, 30 minutes and then they're like, okay, let's break it. Let's have a separate subject. So thank you, Jenny. I really appreciated your knowledge and wisdom and your story of being a park ranger. I'm going to remember that forever. That's awesome.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too.